Thank you so much for joining us for SPIRIT, the Stimulating Program Initiative for Retirees that inspires thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Senior Director of the OU's Department of Community Projects and Partnerships and Coordinator and Host for SPIRIT. The OU started SPIRIT several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it as an online program for retirees, not yet retirees, baby boomers, empty nesters, sandwich generation parents, and seniors, everyone who's looking for educational, intellectual, and spiritual growth. Since the beginning of the pandemic, SPIRIT continues to be the safe and ideal way for everyone to connect and learn together in a virtual setting. Today's program is called Planning Now for the Future, and we're so happy to have returned to us as a SPIRIT presenter, Toby Weiss, who's the AVP of Cultural Diversity at MJHS, Metropolitan Jewish Hospice. Toby presented for us a number of months ago, and we really appreciated her words then, and we're so happy that she's returning to us today. It's my pleasure and honor to turn the SPIRIT Forum over to Toby Weiss. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Thank you, Judy. Thank you to the OU, and thank you, all of you, for joining in today. So today's topic is one that I think is very relevant as we enter or we close in on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. It's a time that we ask for mechila from one another. It's a time that we ask to be sealed in the book of life. It's a time that we think about all that is important to us and all the people that are dear to us. And we think about the hopes that we have not only for ourselves, but for our family members and loved ones. So in today's presentation, which is actually, let me see if I could share my screen. Can you see my screen yet?
Not yet.
Can you see it now?
No.
No?
I'll tell you.
Hold on. This is for seniors and soon to be seniors, right? So it's okay. Here we go. Share a screen. Okay. Share and share. Now do you see it? Share.
What? Wait, we're getting there. We got it. Okay.
Yay. I know that. Now let me change the view so that you can see the whole thing. I know that we already have. Hold on. Why can't I? All right, hold on. I'm sorry, Judy. I'm messing it up already.
Oh, you're doing fine. You're doing fine.
Where? How come I can't find the... Oh my God.
Hold on. You can even just use it as it is now.
Wait 1 minute. I want to get it right. Shoot. Well, we're going to have to leave it like that for now, if that's okay.
If you do Control P, you can do present.
Control P?
Mm-hmm.
Control P. Just did Control P. Hold on a minute. Maybe I can move this. I could do that. There we go. I got it. All right. I got it. Okay. Here we go. So the name of today's presentation is actually Planning for Your Future, if not now, when? And for those of you that are praying for loved ones or yourselves or anyone that you know that may be ill, this program should be a schus for their refuah shleima. And if there's anyone close to you that you mourn, then this should be ilui their neshamas. So let me see if I can move it forward. Why am I now not able to move it? Oh, there we go. Okay. So I really like quotes, and I love Elie Wiesel. And these are two quotes from him. Mankind must remember that peace is not God's gift to his creatures, Peace is our gift to each other. Even in the darkness, it is possible to create light. And my hope for you today is that you walk away with a tool that you can use, that's easy to use, that allows you to think about the things that you want, the things that you don't want, and create the opportunity to share this information with those that are close to you. And that will be a gift of unburdened peace and will also protect you by knowing that your wishes will be carried out. We're going to talk about our practical steps to make your wishes known in a very easy to use document. It's called the Five Wishes. You'll see a picture of it inside, but this is also a picture of what it looks like. It could be accessed online. It was put out by an organization called Aging with Dignity. Download it. I could also give some to Judy, but it could also be shared, and it is yours for the asking. We're going to go over some follow-up steps in order for you to be able to share the information that you document with others, because if you don't share it, then there's a piece that's not going to help, it's not going to be used. And I hope that through doing this type of an exercise, each of you on your own in a place of comfort where you have time to think and ponder, that'll allow you to enter the new year with a sense of peace and know that you've got your housekeeping done, that the Bedek HaBayit is done. There's a lot of literature, medical literature through JAMA, the Journal of Medicine and the Institute of Medicine, where research shows that very often what people ask for, what they say they want, is to live out their days at home, wherever home is, to be free of pain. And realize that people have different tolerances to pain, and there's different kinds of pain. There's physical pain, but there's also emotional pain. Some people may be very good at tolerating physical pain, but emotional pain is a whole different story. People say they want to be in the company of their loved ones, and they want to retain control over the care that they receive, but in a way that it is in alignment with their values and their beliefs. That's also one of the reasons I'm so grateful to you, Judy, and to the OU for inviting me, because I have spent the last 20 years making sure that the work that we do, I mean, MJHS is a large not-for-profit health system, and two of the lines of business are hospice and palliative care. And I have made it my life's work to make sure that care can be delivered to all people based on who they are and in alignment with their values and their beliefs, because no two people are the same. So why then is it important to engage in this concept, this definition of advanced care planning? So let me also just say that advanced care planning is a conversation. Advanced directives are the documents, the forms, the legal documents. So what are the benefits of engaging in the conversation around advanced care planning? It allows you to retain control over your healthcare choices, and it allows you to designate the person that you trust most to be able to speak on your behalf. Let's face it, we all have different family units, we have different family dynamics. If we have siblings or parents or children or grandchildren, or none of the above, but close friends, or even not so close friends, there are some people that you would trust more than others to be the spokesperson for you if you're unable to speak for yourself. And you have to make a decision based on who you feel could carry out your wishes. And in so doing, it reduces the burden on your loved ones, and it helps mitigate crisis decision-making. And I cannot impress upon you enough the importance of this piece to the puzzle, because too often, because we don't like to talk about things that are uncomfortable, we don't. And even if we think about it, but we don't share it, the information is not known. And then all too often, when there's a situation that requires an immediate decision to be made, and there's no one around who could express what you want, crisis decision making is made. And sometimes the decision is made by someone who doesn't even know you. That's not a good thing. So remember, a healthcare proxy is a document, it's a legal document in which you designate a healthcare agent. And it's only used if you cannot speak for yourself. You could change your mind. It's not a one and done. It's not cast in stone. If you change your mind about who you want your healthcare agent to be, that's fine. And if you don't designate someone you trust, as I said a minute ago, someone that you don't know may make decisions for you. And it may be somebody who just doesn't even know you. So think about doing what you need to do. I'd also like to share that there are different halachic implications attached to medical decision-making. I have a passion for ethics. I'm an ethics consultant. In my organization, I have a degree in ethics, and I've seen over and over and over again issues that come up. Sometimes it has nothing to do with halacha. Sometimes it has nothing to do with faith, but sometimes it does. And there are significant tensions between Western medical ethics and Jewish medical ethics. And so it becomes very important, I feel, that you should, in addition to what we're talking about today, you should also make it your business to search through the different halachic medical directives that are out there and complete one. And even if you don't, at the very least, if there is a rav that you feel comfortable with, that knows you, that you would trust, and you feel would help in the decision making based on who you are hashkafically, it's important to identify a rav and ask him if he would be willing to act on your behalf with your family should there be a need. One of the brilliant things, which I didn't realize at the time that I started this thing called the Halachic Pathway at work at MJHS Hospice, was that by asking a family if there is a rav that they choose, that they trust, and they would like to have included in family discussions for goals of care decisions, it was wonderful because it enabled us to have the doctor speak directly to the rav, not without the family, with the family. But if already you're going to ask a rav, a shaila, and the rav is going to paskin, you want to make sure that the question he's thinking about and will answer on your behalf can be answered based on the mitziyut, based on the clinical reality, the accuracy of the case, and not based on what perhaps an overwhelmed and perhaps overwhelmingly distraught family member may have heard or misheard from what the clinicians were saying. Part of the brilliance, which again, I didn't realize at the time, was that by identifying a rav and having it documented, it overcomes any kinds of HIPAA issues, which is the Health Information Privacy Act. So by having the rav's name allows the team to speak also with the rav on your behalf. So now we're going to get into the bones of what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about this document called the Five Wishes. Here's a picture of it. And Five Wishes is a living will. It addresses many different aspects of your needs and your care options. It addresses the personal, the emotional, and spiritual needs along with the medical and the legal wishes. The Five Wishes was developed with the American Bar Association and multiple different healthcare professionals and experts. And what it does is help you at the end of the day, once you've gone through it, it does help you have a discussion with the family and with the doctors that you trust. One of the most outstanding things about this document, in my view, is that there's reciprocity, there's legal reciprocity in 46 states. That's quite significant when you think about state-based healthcare proxies. Like I'm in New York, so I could download from the New York state government website, I could download a New York State healthcare proxy, but there's not much reciprocity. Maybe there's reciprocity in one or two states. What that means is that if you have a state-based healthcare proxy and you travel to wherever it is that you're traveling across the country, it may be that if you have an emergency and you need somebody to speak for you, and you have a healthcare proxy in a state that doesn't have reciprocity with the state that you're in, then there's a chance that they will not honor that healthcare proxy. The Five Wishes, again, has reciprocity in 46 states. What does it look at? The Five Wishes looks at five different questions. Which person do you want to make healthcare decisions for you when you can't make them for yourself? It looks at the kind of medical treatment you want or don't want, how comfortable you want to be, how you want people to treat you, what you want your loved ones to know. Now, I want to share with you a personal story and explain to you, I'm not just giving you a presentation. I actually believe in this. So this is actually a personal story that occurred. I'm a child of two Holocaust survivors. I grew up without family with two brothers. And both my brothers made Aliyah many years ago and both married. And a number of years ago, about 5 years ago, my oldest brother was not well and had been declining. And my sister-in-law and my nephew and my other brother kept calling me and saying, "Tope, Eli, he's just given up. We don't know what to do. He's given up." And I said, "I don't believe that." I said, "I'll tell you what, I'm going to come and we're going to get together on a Motzei Shabbos and we're going to go over a document and we're not leaving until we're done with this document." And I sent them an electronic version. And then I went to Eretz Yisrael and I brought the hard copies. And on a Motzei Shabbos, we got together at my brother's house in Efrat. And we sat, both my brothers, my sisters-in-law, my nephew, my niece. And we sat there for about 2.5 hours. And we went through this whole thing. And what we found by the end of it was that my brother, who everybody believed had given up, was the one who said that as long as he was able to recognize people, was able to see his grandchildren and be in the presence of his family, he wanted to be here. My other brother and my sisters-in-law said, "Take me up back. I don't want this." My nephew said, "Well, I have to talk to my Rav." The point is, it's not so pashut. It's not so simple. We can't come to conclusions unless we really parse through the information and think thoughtfully about what's important to us. So let's go now drill down a little bit. The first wish is who you want to make decisions if you can't. This allows you to name a person to speak on your behalf. I happen to be in a blended family. We have 6 children. Raised all of them together. We love them all dearly, but they're not all the same. And of all of the children, I know who's the mush. I know the one who doesn't make decisions easily. I know the one who takes the bull by the, you know, by the horns. And we made a decision as to who would be able to speak for us if we could not speak for ourselves. And you have to do that too. You got to know your cast of characters. Love them all, but you know who's able to do what, and for the most part, who would have a harder time. The person that you speak on your behalf becomes known as your healthcare agent, and the Five Wishes, as well as healthcare proxies, become the durable power of attorney for healthcare. And again, as I said before, it's a healthcare proxy. The second wish is the kind of medical treatment that you do or you don't want. It expresses instructions for your caregiver, what's important to you. Not all people want the same thing. As I mentioned before, excuse me, some people have a higher tolerance for pain. Some people don't. Some people will say, just put me out. I can't deal with the pain. Other people will say, I want to be here. I want to know what's going on around me. Just take the edge off. Some people won't want to have a PEG tube. Some people won't. Some people, if they have infections, most of us in our community are going to all want antibiotics. But I'm just giving you an example. I'm giving you multiple examples because you can't take for granted that all people want the same thing. Circumstances can change. Don't know what's going to be when a person is ill. There are different kinds of comorbidities, other kinds of illnesses that may be there alongside. There may be exacerbations based on these comorbidities. And there are different questions that come up. The question of do not resuscitate, do not intubate, do not hospitalize. Depending on the severity of a person's illness and how debilitated they are, may influence what they decide they would want or not want. Not everybody wants the same thing. And you really have to think about what it is you want. And if you don't understand the meaning of all of these terms, you have to speak to a physician and you have to ask, and they will be willing to speak with you. A lot of doctors, unfortunately, based on the medical system today, don't have the time and sit with you and go over all of this information. But if you ask and you say, I really need information, I want you to help me, I need to understand, they will. Also, it gives space to add instructions in the document. There's places where you could add information based on your beliefs and what you want. The third wish is how comfortable I want to be. It expresses how you want your physical symptoms to be managed. It expresses your choice and interest to address emotional needs. Sometimes we need to reconcile. Sometimes we've had a hard relationship with some people. Sometimes we have to come to terms with our own lives, within our own being. You could add, you could cross out, you could keep items based on your preferences. Some people want to have someone sitting with them and saying Tehillim. Some people don't. Do you want someone who's close to you to say Vidui? I have seen over and over again men who daven every day. It's very much a part of their lives. It's something they always want to be part of their lives, but they can no longer put on the tefillin. They can say, you could document, I want someone to put the tefillin on for me. Some people have a hard time shutting down from all of the tension and the stress. You might want to have music played, or you might want to have, I don't know, art or whatever it is that gives you comfort. We're talking now in the third wish about what gives you comfort. Some people just want to be left alone. Others take very important how they look. They want to be clean. They want to have their makeup done. They want to be dressed as if people were coming in. Grooming is an important piece of comfort. How I want people to treat me is the fourth wish. What others should keep in mind if you become seriously ill. Whether you want to have people around you or left alone. I've seen situations where people just, they couldn't tolerate having people in the room. It actually added a level of burden or discomfort because they felt bad that they were in such a situation and didn't want others to see them like that. Then there are others who just want to have the comfort of somebody being there. For example, I joke around with my children and my grandchildren. I've become a comedy sketch between my poor hearing and my claustrophobia. If you put me in a room without a window, I will have a panic attack. I want somebody there holding my hand because I get very claustrophobic. Do you want prayers said for you? Do you want prayers said with you? Do you want to be at home for as long as you can be? Do you want family artifacts around you? What gives you a sense of peace? What makes you feel the comfort of being in your own home? Do you want people in your community to know? I'm speaking to the OU community right now. In our communities, Bikur Cholim is a big thing. And very often when somebody's not doing well, people step up to the plate. That's part of the uniqueness of our community. But that doesn't mean that somebody wants everyone to know. These are things that you have a right to voice. Do you want your rabbi to visit you and to be involved? These are all things that you should be thinking about. And then the fifth wish, which, to be very, very honest with you, is what tipped the scale for me in the direction of this document. To me, the fifth wish, which is what I want my loved ones to know, serves as a tava, as an ethical will. How many times in your life have you thought about the things that you might want to say to those that you love, but didn't find the right time to say it? You know, there's one thing in life that you cannot take back, and that's time. And when it comes to a point where you have the opportunity, especially when it's uncertain what will be in the future, you have the opportunity to share with those that you love the blessings that you want to bestow upon them, the hopes that you have for them, the special talents that they have that you appreciate, but you may never have said anything to them about. Sometimes we have family members that we love. Sometimes we have family members that we may love or like, but we don't get along with them. Or we've had circumstances where there were tensions and created machloket in a family. Still, there's opportunities for reconciliation, to say, I'm sorry. Do you forgive me? I forgive you. There are opportunities to create peace when a person's future is uncertain. It allows you as well to say thank you. Children, it's very hard for children to watch a parent or a grandparent as they fade away. But to be able to say to a child or a grandchild, I will always love you. I will always be with you. Whether I'm with you physically or not, I will be with you and I will watch over you. And these really communicate messages that otherwise don't always get said. So think about it. Think about the opportunities to create peace, not only for you, but for those that you love. When you complete the five wishes, what you have to do is print your name. You read the statement carefully. I'll show it to you. It's in the back when you sign. It's the last pages. When you open it up, you print your name, you read the statement carefully, and you ask two witnesses to be present, and they witness that you signed it of your own will. And you have to sign it in front of the witnesses, but the witnesses do not have to read your wishes. That's not something that is part of it. They're just witnessing that you, in fact, signed it and you are of sound mind. After you complete the five wishes, it is very important that you make copies of it and that you actually take the time to meet with your loved ones. It's best to do it as a whole family because it creates a measure of transparency. Everybody is on the same page. It level sets. Don't put it somewhere where nobody's going to see it. Do not put it under your mattress or in a safe deposit box. Put it over the bed, put it on the back of the front door, put it on the fridge. There's also inside of it a wallet size card. So in the last page, there is this, you see it on the screen, but I'm showing you also in the booklet, where you cut out the wallet size card, which you also sign, and the witnesses are there. And then you could also, on the other side of it, it lets you put down the name of the physician to reach out to. You fold it, you stick it in your wallet, and that's the end of it. At work, many years ago, we created a healthcare proxy card. It's a cardboard card, which does the same thing. And I tell people, just fill it out. Stick it in your wallet like you stick your insurance card or your license. Because what do? God forbid, somebody walks across the street and they fall or they faint or worse. As good Samaritans, what we do is we call Hatzalah or 911, but we don't know who the person is. So then we open up a person's wallet to try to find some identification. And then we know if we see a card like this, the healthcare proxy card and the name of someone to call, we know how to let them know that their loved one is in trouble. So it's a very important thing to fill out and to put in your wallet. So a final thought, I'm going to go back to Elie Wiesel and the quotes because I love them. Elie Wiesel throughout his life sought to give voice to the voiceless. My message to you is to use your voices to ensure your wishes are known and give a gift of peace to those you love. That's it. So now I hope that you enjoyed this, and I'm going to stop sharing if I could. Let's see how to get back into this. Stop share. Okay, here we go.
Okay, I hope Toby, first of all, thank you so much for such a appropriate and meaningful presentation, and very, very timely. Do you have any questions? I don't have anything in my chat. We still certainly have time, so people might just be digesting. Do you have anything?
There's one question.
Somebody has raised their hand. We do not unmute people in spirit, so please, whatever question or comment you have, please put it in the chat either to Toby or to myself, because we don't unmute. Okay, I'm sorry, Toby, go ahead.
Yeah, so the question Yosef asked, can you provide relevant information for people in Israel, documents, organizations, etc.? So it's a great question. I was just actually on a meeting, a program with the joint with JDC Eshel, and there were a group of geriatric gerontologists from several different hospitals there. I don't know if they have a similar kind of healthcare proxy document in Israel. I do know that they have, I heard presentations a number of years ago from Abraham S. Abraham, and it was around ethics, but there are halachic directives that you could access and it would be accepted. So I will do a little bit more research to find out if there is an Israel specific document, but I don't know offhand, but I believe that if you have a halachic medical directive and or if you have this type of a document, the living will, the five wishes or any other kind of living will, and you fill it out and you have it witnessed, that it will be honored. But one of the pieces to the puzzle, not the puzzle, one of the things that will guarantee that what you want will actually be adhered to is if you have the conversation, if you share your wishes with your loved ones in the presence of others, because that's edut, they're witnessing what you're saying. And then there's no guesswork as far as what you want. But to the direct answer to your question is I have to find out. And if you send me, I will give you my email address. It's on the slide, but my email address is tweiss@mjhs.org. That stands for Metropolitan Jewish Health System. tweiss@mjhs.org. And if you email me, I give you my word, Bli Nedar, I will find out and I will respond to you. And Judy, I will send you the information once I find out as well.
Beautiful. So we can send it out. And if anyone didn't get Toby's email address, we will include that in with the recording that Bezra Sashem you'll get either today or tomorrow. So if anything else you want to go over, it'll be there. Okay, so I have a couple of comments. Oh. You'll appreciate this. One person is saying, excellent, excellent. So many great points. My husband and I keep putting off this discussion, but promise to do so now. Okay, so That already makes everything worthwhile.
So okay, I'm going to give you a little tip. When you sit down with the five wishes, sit down either with a cup of coffee or tea or a glass of wine. Because when you read through it, even though the language in the five wishes is really very simple language, the thought process is not simple. And you have to start somewhere. So think about it, because it evokes different thoughts. And, you know, I've used the phrase before and I'm going to use it again because I mean it. It's not a one and done. You have to think about it. Things may change. If you're in your 50s, you feel one way. If you're in your 60s or 70s, you feel a different way. And the older you get and the more you deal with in your own life and the life of those that are close to you, the more you need to think. And even when people have a living will or a healthcare proxy, or even a financial, you know, estate plan, you still have to rethink it and review it as life circumstances change. But get it done, because at least you have it done. And then if you have it done, you must have the conversation with your family and make sure that they're all there, because you want to avoid machloket in the future. And by having transparency helps avoid machloket. I'm sorry, Judy, what else do you have?
No, that's fine. So somebody wants to know, I think maybe, how can you get the document, the five wishes document, said if we don't live in New Jersey? I mean, you can get it online anywhere, right?
You could go online, go to Aging
If you can just
Dignity.
Give us the link, well, we can sure. include that with the recording.
Yes, it's from Aging with Dignity. Hold on, I'll put it in the, hold on. One second.
Toby, I'll get it from you afterwards and then okay. we'll just include it later.
Okay? Yeah, I want to preface when people look into it. Aging with Dignity is an organization that is steeped in a fundamentalist community. I do not espouse or adhere to fundamentalists or non-Jewish principles, but the document itself is in very neutral language, and it can be adapted to your values and your beliefs. So I just want to put that out there, because somebody once said to me, why would you use that kind of document when it was created and wherever? It's like, the document is a good one. It asks the right questions. It evokes the right thoughts, and it creates a plan that could be shared with our loved ones. So, yeah. Anything else?
Somebody just commented that you can look it up online. So, but yeah. we will add a link from the recording. Do you have any other comments or questions for you?
I would ask Judy. I know that there used to be an RCA, Halachic Medical Directive. Just realize everyone, there's multiple different halachic medical directives out there. The most important piece of information that you have to remember about the halachic medical directive is that it is documenting that you want, if God forbid a person cannot speak for themselves and they've designated a healthcare agent as well as a rav, that you're signing that you want your treatment to be decided and delivered in alignment with your values and beliefs halachically. It's very important if a person is in a hospital and if God forbid someone dies and they were not cognitively intact, you want to make sure that a person's disposition of remains is going to be dealt with according to halacha. And not, God forbid, something else. So really, it's all a safety valve. All of these documents are a safety valve. Think about what's important to you and then write it down. The halachic medical directives in particular, the chap behind the halachic medical directives was that it enabled a rabbi's name to be included as an alternate or an additional agent if you are observant and there's a rabbi that you trust, it's a good thing to have. But also remember, one of the things that I said in the presentation, and I'll say it again, don't make an assumption that the Rav that you want is going to feel comfortable being called when they don't even know that you put their name down. You should let them know and ask that they are okay with it.
Okay, somebody, I'm getting a question. What is your suggestion for how to begin these difficult conversations, you know, with your family? Like, where do you start? Like, you know, you don't want people to think that there's like some reason that, you know, the end is coming. It just, you know, you want to, right. You know, and it's just not that at all.
Right. So the way you start is by doing it for yourself. And until you've thought through this information, don't have the meeting with your family, because you're going to be wishy-washy because you don't know. It's hard to get through. It's hard to go through. And once you've done it, you have an obligation to tell the people that you love and just say it straight. Say, look, I want us all to meet. I did this with my family. And, you know, part of what my concern was, one of my concerns was that I wanted them to know that I selected the person that I felt would best be able to carry out my wishes, and that I didn't select that person because I loved her more or I loved them less. I did it based on different variables, and I wanted to make it clear that they were all of equal bearing and all loved equally, but for the reasons that I said, we thought that this child would be best to handle this. And the child had to be okay with being the one designated. And the kids all accepted it. They understood it. Sorry, Gardner. They understood it. They accepted it. And that was the end of the story. But when we sat down as a family, we said, okay, we're going to go over this together. It's not enough that you're designating one person. You want them to know some of the things that you thought about. Now, look, we can't think about things that we don't know, and we can't anticipate things that we don't expect or we haven't encountered. And there's always surprises. But to the best of your ability, based on the experiences that you've had with people that you love and those that you know who've gone through crazy situations with illness or death or whatever, those are the things that remain in your mind. And if I asked you, well, I can't see all of you, but if I asked you, did you ever have a friend or a family member that was ill or passed on and had a horrible situation, one where you said, I don't want that for me. I don't know what I want, but I don't want that. Those are the things that leave an impression on us. And that's the reason you have to think more consciously and mindfully about what you do want, what you know you don't want, but realize that things could change. And you can be open to the change if you speak with people, you know, the Rav or a physician that you trust who knows you, and you get a better understanding of what the landscape is, and things change over time. So just because you say, I don't want this kind of a treatment or that kind of a treatment, well, guess what? Treatments change, medications change. And there are opportunities for you to rethink what you want based on changes in medicine and the culture today. I don't know if I answered you. I hope I did.
No, I think that was pretty thorough. I don't have anything else. Do you?
No.
Okay. Thank you so much. Before we end the session, I just have a few announcements. So next week will be our last time before we'll take a quick break for the Yom Tovim. We have, again, a very appropriate and timely topic. The topic is called From Family Feud to Relationship Rapport, and it'll be given by Deborah Laffer Esquire. It's on basically how are we navigating family relationships during this complicated Yontif time. It's coming after Rosh Hashanah and before Yom Kippur and Sukkah. So we've been in the middle with our family of a lot of meals and a lot of discussion. So we want to have everything go, you know, in a good positive way. And Deborah Laffer, who does mediation, will be able to really navigate this with us. So that'll be next week at 12 noon Eastern Daylight Time. A couple of other points. Last night, we had our second session of our Parkinson's support group. And if anybody needs any of the materials from that, please let me know. We will be doing some formal groups after Yuntif, and you'll be getting more information about that. And we also starting a multi-group program on Mondays after Yuntif on postural therapy. We had a session, I think it was at the around July, on postural therapy, and there was some interest in more programs on it. There is a charge for that program, but you will be getting all the registration information when you get the recording. So just follow all that. And lastly, I want to tell everybody to be well, have a great day and a good week. And of course, just can you imagine it, already we're going into the end of season. So Kasiba Chasima Tova, it should be a wonderful, good Gbench year for all of us and for our families. Thank you all of us for joining us. One other point, I'm sorry.
Somebody just asked for my email. I'm going to put it in the chat. Will they see it? Yeah.
Well, they're going to get to go with the recording. So everybody will get it. The Family Feud topic is a week from today. And I just want to also mention, I assume this week you'll be getting as a separate email, a request to think of spirit when you give your tzedakah. It's that time of the year. So please, when you give tzedakah, remember this program, we want to grow it. There's a lot more we want to do, but we need your help. So thank you, everybody. Wait, there's anything else here? No, that's it. And we thank you for your support and your participation. And we look forward to continuing it and growing it. Take care, everybody.